Blog Talk Radio.
America's born and planned all along, and you need to realize that winning the future is just a future full of lies. He's wearing a disguise, let it drill in the gulf, because behind the sheep clothing, you know that you're just a woke.
All
right.
All over the world, Obama keeps bringing that liberal drama. Failed policy after failed policy, God saved the Republic, we're not a democracy, alright.
All over the world, Obama keeps bringing that liberal drama. Failed policy after failed policy, God saved the Republic, we're not a democracy, alright. The heart of a coward caught in foreign policy forgets we are endowed by your creator, no apology. Rule more like a king when we were just some colonies of patriots, the marching, creating the greatest following, especially with the president like Barack Hussein, who proved he'd rather be playing a golf game than take care of the lame, the sick and heavy laden. Instead of helping Libya, he just spit on the nation. But what can you expect from a FDR clone with no guts? You lost our trust, you ain't got a backbone. Chicago is your home, it shouldn't be DC. We the people speaking up, tell me, can you hear? We all right.
All over the world, Obama keeps bringing that liberal drama. Failed policy, God saved the Republic, we're not a democracy, all right.
All over the world, Obama keeps bringing that liberal drama. Failed policy after failed policy, God saved the Republic, we're not a democracy, all right.
All
right. Barack is soon to set sail. Vote for
today's
all
date.
Open fail.
June 30th. Time is flying, folks. We're living in Washington, D.C. Actually, beautiful old town Alexandria, right next to the Potomac. I look out the window and I can see the Watergate Hotel. I can see planes flying overhead every 5 minutes. Damn. Coming from the airport, Ronald Reagan Airport. Folks are out. Right out in the restaurant area, the sitting out, having coffee, all sorts of really goodness out there, good food, good wine, and a lot of them are just kind of sitting there with their dogs, you know. And the dogs are out, you know, when you have the seats just outside the restaurant, and you have folks sitting out at the tables, and they're having these fine meals, and you're walking right past them, and they've got these hideous-looking dogs just sitting right there, and you're wondering, okay, you know, if that were my dog, he'd be trying to get some of my chow. But these dogs are so well refined and so well behaved that they just kind of sit there while their owners just chill and have wine and cheese. And I thought I saw a smoked salmon. I thought I saw some sea bass. I know I saw a steak. You could smell that coming down the block. But I tell you what, it's a beautiful day here in the Virginia, D.C. area. and I'm just glad to be here. Yeah, yeah, I tell you what, Karen, it is very, very nice to be in Washington, D.C., in Alexandria this time of the year. I headed down to the wharf earlier today, got myself a bushel of crab. I have no way of eating a full bushel of crab, and they're not all that good once you freeze them. I was being greedy because I have the means to purchase those crab because I've been working hard, you know, for a very long time, and I can buy the crab, and I can even afford to buy too many crab, and I can even afford to waste a few. But under this current administration, all that's going to come to an end because I'll be forced to give some of those crab away, whether I want to or not. Yes, that's right, Beach Bum. Straight out of the Potomac, straight out of the water here. Fine blue crab, finely seasoned, freshly steamed. They were crawling around no more than an hour ago. They were crawling around right here at the Fisherman's Wharf here in beautiful D.C., just a couple of blocks away from Fort McNair. I tell you what, I saw one feisty little crab trying to get away, and I let him know he's going to be the first one in the pot. I asked for a marker from the fishery place, and I said, put a big G on that crab right there, because he's going to be the first one to go in the pot. He's just a little bit too feisty for my taste right now. Well, in addition to that, I am very, they don't really cost that much, Beach Bum. Life is good, even with Obama, but he's out of town today, and so we feel like we need to go ahead and throw a party because that clown has left town for today. And I'm going to share some of my fine, freshly seasoned, freshly steamed blue crab with some of the neighbors because there's no way I can eat it all. But I tell you what, the bushel is actually less expensive than if I bought them like a bag of like 20, you know, or 10. When I was a young man, I was stationed in Quantico. I had never seen a blue crab before. I'd never seen crabs before like they were served. I got off the Greyhound bus coming in from D.C. into Quantico, and there's this little shop right next to the Greyhound bus station, right outside Quantico, right outside the Marine Base, that sold blue crab in a bag. You get it in a brown paper bag. They'll put 5 or 10 of them in the bag. You get it for like $5, and then they put the seasoning in, the Old Bay seasoning. They shake it up, and then they give it to you, and you just walk around eating the crab out of the bag like potato chips. Anyway, I got the colossal male blue crab, delicious. I can put away a healthy sum of those blue crab. Hello, Antoinette. It's good to see you. It's good to see you. Beach Bum and Karen are in the house. Tesla is out, you all, and I'm quite reluctant to give too much information about what's going on with him. I'm not really sure that he would want me to speak too much about what's happening with him. Does anybody know Tesla, who I'm talking about when I speak about Tesla? Well, Tesla's not feeling so well, and some of you might know this already, but he is not doing so well, and that's all I really want to go ahead and say about that. I'd like for you all to say, you know, a few prayers for him. Hopefully he'll be back real soon. I am headed down this weekend to Jensen Beach, where he lives, and I'm going to head down to Jensen Beach, and I'm going to hang out with him for a while because he's really all by himself right now. His wife is out of town. I think she's somewhere in Indonesia right now, Vietnam or someplace like that. And she hasn't made it back yet, so he's all by himself. I'm going to go down this weekend, keep him company. He is not doing very well at all. But he is as feisty as ever. Every other word was F this and F that. And he said he wanted a cheeseburger. He said he wanted a Wendy's burger with cheese and some fries. He's in the hospital, folks. He shouldn't be eating that stuff. But that's what he says he wants. And he's been complaining, you know, pretty much the whole time. And I like to hear it because it just tells me that he's still pretty strong and he's still pretty feisty. Until I get word on whether or not he'd like, you know, he'd like me to, you know, let folks know exactly what's going on with him. I'll keep exactly what's happening, you know, under wraps until I get clarification from him. I don't want to get on Tesla's bad side, especially as feisty as he has been these last couple of days. Me and Cool Mike have been in constant contact with Tesla over these last few days. We noticed that he was not around. Thank you. Thank you, Beach Bum and Antoinette. I'll let him know that you guys are thinking about him. We noticed that Tesla wasn't around Friday. I had canceled my Friday show because I simply did not want to compete with Tesla's Friday Night Roundtable, the show that he does at 9 p.m., and I was just going to go ahead and go into his show. So I canceled my show for that Friday night, and then I awaited Tesla to come on the air, and he never did. So I figured that he must have had some technical issues, as we often do here on Blog Talk Radio. Well, Sunday rolls around, and he's about to have a show on Sunday. His show is about to start, and once again, no Tesla. At that time, I started to become worried, you know, because I have never known Tesla in the year that I've known him to miss a show. And so I called Cool Mike, and I asked Mike if he knew what was going on, and he said that he was on the phone with Tesla at that moment and that Tesla was in the hospital and he wasn't doing so well. So here we are. So I will give Tesla, he is not feeling well at all. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give him a call after the show and then, you know, kind of make sure that he's going to be, you know, up and around for my my visit this coming weekend. I hope that he is feeling better today. I know that he's given a lot of trouble to the folks at the hospital in Jensen Beach. I can tell you that right now. Well, folks, you're on with the C. Robert Jones Conservative Radio Report. Tonight we're going to talk a little bit about what's been on my mind a lot lately is the movie Atlas Shrugged. Now, I was a geek as a child. As it's probably obvious, I suppose. And during my childhood, 11, 12, 13, I read two sources, three, the Bible, Revelation fascinated me, and comic books, DC Comics, the Avengers, all those other different types of comics. And then one really thick, hard read. And a lot of the words I didn't really understand. And that book was Ayn Rand's Atlas Shrugged. Yeah, it's hard to believe, isn't it, Karen? It really is. I mean, I try to keep it under wraps. But it's so true. So I was reading Ayn Rand's book as a young child, and then again in high school, and then again in college. And this week I've been talking a lot about it. Last week and this week I've been talking a lot about it, but only toward the end of the week did I really put Ayn Rand and Barack Obama and what's going on, not just Barack Obama, because I'm always hard on the guy because he just sucks so very badly. Not just the Obama administration is what I want to touch on tonight. It's the irony of Ayn Rand's message and the book and how it plays out today. Now, the book was written in 1957. Ayn Rand was a movie screenwriter who was on tough times at the time, and she decided she was going to go ahead and write her own novels. So her real name is almost completely unpronounceable. So Ayn Rand is the name that she took, and I do appreciate it because I would hate to have to pronounce her given name. Yeah, I didn't use the pocket protector, but I can tell you I did. I was pretty much a geek. I once owned a briefcase, AM/FM radio. I mean, it was an AM/FM radio that was in the form of an actual attaché case. Yeah, James Bond style. So, in the book, Ayn Rand once famously said through her character, Ellsworth Toohey, and I quote, "It's always safe to denounce the rich. In my view, this is true because our culture has a bias against wealthy individuals." And you could see that earlier this week when the Obama presser, where he is now focusing his ire on corporate jet owners. It's amazing, you know, because there are those the conservatives and political pundits who are saying that even if corporate jet owners were taxed 70-80%, that would be a drop in the bucket toward the overall budget and deficit. But I think they missed the point. Barack Obama wasn't speaking to corporate jet owners. He wasn't complaining about corporate jet owners. He was complaining about those who are wealthy, people who make money, people who produce, and stating that the producers, his message was the producers, for all their wealth and all their power and all their good fortune, should turn over a portion of that fortune to those less fortunate. Now, he's not saying this because he thinks that philanthropy is good and that we should give and that to whom much is given, much is required. You know, not like that. No. It's you have gone to college. You have studied hard. And instead of going to work for someone else, you started your own business, your own company. You slept on a futon couch for a long time. You drove a crappy old car because most of the money that you made, you kept putting back, you continue to put back into your small company. Let's take a small company like, for instance, Dell Computers, that started in out of the garage of Mr. Dell. Well, I'm sure that he struggled early on to make and grow his business. He struggled mightily. I know that he did. I read his bio. So you go and you create your own business, you struggle hard, and then finally you meet with a little bit of luck and then a little bit of success. And so you're successful, you're making money now, you're increasing your staff, you're hiring people, you're paying taxes, you're doing all the things you need to do, and finally you begin to reap the rewards of your hard work and effort. And then you have an administration that comes along that says that now that you've done all that, you've suffered and sacrificed, made your company a success, you're hiring people, you're employing people, you're paying taxes, they're paying taxes, hopefully. Now we want you to give more. But don't give more individually of yourself, your time, maybe a bit of your fortune out of your own, the goodness of your heart. No, give it to the government. Give it to me, the President of the United States, and I'll go ahead and disperse it as I see fit. And if you don't give it to me willingly, then I'm going to go ahead and take it through taxes and through regulation. I want your wealth. I want your money. And if you don't give it to me willingly, I'm going to take it and then disperse it as I see fit. And let's call it right now the redistribution of wealth. And that's what the president was really saying during his presser earlier this week. He wasn't speaking about corporate jet owners. He was speaking about people who make money, people who have, through sheer luck, determination, 16-hour, 17-hour, 18-hour days, 7 days a week to make their businesses grow. He's saying to those folks, now I'm taking it. I'm taking what you have. Give it up. Now, in spite of this, ours is a society. Ours is, in fact, the one society in history that has established the freedom that creates the opportunity for people to become rich. There's a contradiction here, and this contradiction has created an interesting dynamic in my mind. The progressive liberal movement, whose promise is that those who earn the most are required to pay the most in taxes. It includes politicians who assume that all Americans should make their moral and economic decisions based not on their own self-interest, but on that of the government, and that on what the government considers the general well-being. WAAU Radio is in the house. Good to see you. The dynamic is eloquently put forward by Barack Obama, the Democrat Party presidential nominee in 2008. And I quote, "We reward people a lot for being rich, for being famous, for being cute, for being thin. One of the values I think we need to instill in our country, in our children, is a sense of usefulness. In other words, we are useful. Are we useful? Are we making other people's lives a little bit better?" Now here, no psychologist, but I think this quote reveals something more than just an identification of how Obama thinks we treat the rich. It reveals an opinion both about how Obama sees the rich and that he views social services as a much more important value than self-interest. In our economy, we decidedly do not reward people for being rich. And I'm not sure what Obama means by that, because of progressive taxation. Well, because of progressive taxation and other onerous punishments of the rich are effectively tied to a whipping post. We certainly don't wait for them to be rich and then reward them. In fact, the truth is exactly the opposite of what Obama stated. It's possible that Obama has never learned to draw the distinction between hard work and a life of living off his income from serving others. Having his early organizing days made it possible for him to live off donations from others rather than from his own production. It's possible that all his life he has avoided doing anything truly productive. And in fact, that is the case, because President Obama has actually not really ever really held a job, not a real job. Now, folks will say he was a professor at the prestigious University of Chicago, which even I, your humble, brilliant host, could not get into. My scores were just a tad too low at the time. Be that as it may, Barack Obama was not an instructor, a substitute instructor. But does that qualify as not being productive? Barack Obama has served to not actually have a real job. Now, I want to go ahead and play a clip for you before things get truly out of hand. I'd like to start off with this Ayn Rand versus Barack Obama clip, which I think is pretty interesting, and I'd like for you to really take a listen. And then if you feel like it, call in. 347-884-8500, and we'll discuss it, because I think that the resurgence of Ayn Rand's book, which is now ticked up in sales once again, it's one of the four top-selling novels, books, in fact, of all time. The movie came out April 15th, the first installment. It's a trilogy, and it's going to be pretty good. I have not seen the first segment of the trilogy. I am actually downloading it, a bootleg copy. Shh, don't tell anybody. Keep that to yourself. Right now. So, yeah. So check this out, and we'll go on with the program. WAAU Radio. Obama is a Keynesian. He is wrong, and I am an Austrian believer. Okay. All right. Here we go. Let's play.
Study economics. A free economy will not break down. All depressions are caused by government interference.
That we should strip away regulations, consumer protections, let the market run wild, and prosperity would rain down on all of us. It hasn't worked out that way.
The cure is always offered, so far, to take more of the poison that caused the disaster.
And so now we've got to take some decisive action. This plan's one reason that mortgage interest rates are now at near historic lows. To that end, we've launched a program designed to support the markets for more affordable auto loans, student loans, and small business loans, a program that's already securitized more of this lending in the last week than in the last 4 months combined.
Depressions are not a result of a free economy. Labor leaders get together to initiate legislation to help labor. That is only acting on the same principle, namely all parties agreeing that it is proper for the state to legislate in favor of one economic group or another.
Middle class need a rescue package. It means help for homeowners so that they can stay in their homes. It means that we are helping state and local governments set up road projects and bridge projects. You need somebody working for you, and you've got to have somebody in Washington who's thinking about the middle class and not just those who can afford to hire lobbyists.
The country is run by majority rule through ballot, and that majority seems to prefer to vote for this modified welfare state.
Oh, I don't believe that. You know as well as I do that the majority today has no choice.
As President of the United States, Alan, I would order the Secretary of the Treasury to immediately buy up the bad home loan mortgages in America.
The second step we took was to launch a plan to stabilize the housing market. Yesterday, Secretary Geithner announced a new plan that will partner government resources with private investment to buy up the assets that are preventing our banks from lending money.
What do you mean?
The majority has never been offered a choice between control and freedom.
Until we stabilize home values in America, we're never going to start turning around and creating jobs.
The strategy to create jobs?
And fixing our economy.
That's why we put in place a comprehensive strategy designed to attack this crisis on all fronts. But we must remember that we can get there if we travel that road as one nation, as one people.
Is that not true?
No, it isn't.
Oh.
This country was made not by robber barons, but by independent men, by industrialists who succeeded on sheer ability.
And having
by ability, I mean without political force, help, or compulsion.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. Without political influence or compulsion, entrepreneurs have sought to make money. Now, yeah, I will grant you this, for those of you who need to be granted something. There have been those robber barons, those folks who have taken advantage of their workers. Oh, those two fine gentlemen who I wrote about in my doctoral thesis, who built the railroads from one end of the continent to the other, one end of the country to the other. They did so by investing their own money, yes. They did so by risking everything in the contracts they had with the government. This is a time when there were no hedge funds, when there were no using other people's money to do anything. Back then, you used your own money, your own labor, your own resources. There was no wealth created out of thin air. So these two fine gentlemen who built the railroads or who facilitated the building of the railroads took great advantage of their workers. mostly the Chinese workers who were responsible for the actual labor, and the African Americans and some Native Americans. But mostly the Chinese workers were harshly treated and taken advantage of mightily by these two railroad magnates. Does that mean that they should be obligated to turn over their fortunes or surrender their fortunes? I don't think so. Tonight we're discussing Ayn Rand's book, Atlas Shrugged, Obama Shrugged, the movie Ayn Rand, and how Ayn Rand's book, Atlas Shrugged, plays out in everyday history today. Now, I'm going to go ahead and ask you this. You know, I would, if you're interested in Ayn Rand's book, Atlas Shrugged, and you should be, I really think you should, it's just my opinion, go ahead and get the audio version and listen to it that way while you're driving down the road and you're on your iPad or your whatever MP3 player you're using, and listen to it, because it's much more entertaining to listen to it than to read the book. Because kind of reading the book is kind of like War and Peace. And the movie, although I've been told through reliable sources, is extremely accurate, they do leave some important issues out in the interest of time. So you just go, really, I would urge that. We have a caller on the line, one of my favorite people, David Graham, who wrote the book Stay Mad, that you can find on lulu.com. He's on the line right now. We want to get him in here. Hey, David, is that you?
Hey, that's me. Is my chair too squeaky today?
I don't hear it. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. I was listening. As you know, I can't get into the chat room, so you wouldn't have known I was listening, but I wanted to... The thing kept cutting out. My page kept reloading, so I'd hear you talking, all of a sudden you'd stop talking.
You need a new computer.
It's 3 months old.
What is
going
on?
It's a 3-month-old iMac.
I have not heard of anyone else having any issues with their chat room. I've actually thought about this. Sitting here in my chair, looking at the Potomac over across from the Watergate, just sitting here thinking, why the hell can't Davis get his chat room going? What kind of life is that?
Well, it's good that you're thinking of me, and that's why I like you. But I did a test show yesterday. Just for anybody listening, I did a test show yesterday for about an hour where I was chatting back and forth with the support on BTR, and they said they could log into it once I launched the thing. But mine just kept saying connecting, reconnecting to server, connecting to server, and I couldn't do it. So I did a show today. I launched it, but I also launched the other chat room. I put some chat code on a button on my homepage, and I launched that, and then I launched the BTR chat. And I don't know if anybody was using it or not, you know, because I could never access it. They went through all the things, you know, what browser are you using? So I gave them all three browsers, and they said, well, maybe if you downloaded Google Chrome. I was like, really? I got three browsers, and I have to download another one? I don't think so. I mean, and then I have another computer next to me with the Internet Explorer, and it doesn't work with that. Well, what about your firewall? Well, let me check. No, firewall's never not on. Okay, yeah. What about this? What about cleaning your cache out? Okay, I cleaned it out, lost all my pages that I had, so I'm going through all the websites that I had saved and everything. I got to go back through all that. But it still didn't make any difference. Okay, well, I'm going to hand this over to our tech department, and we'll email you when we have an answer. Mm-hmm. So that's where I'm at. No answer as of today, and that was... But anyways, enough about me. Carry on. I was just listening.
All right, okay. We have another call on the line. Thump in, too. Hey, you're on with the C. Robert Jones Conservative Radio Report.
Hey, this is Victor Mikulowski from Insane Government. I know I have that crazy username. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, it's not bad, though.
Yeah. I was hearing what you said about the railroad system and the Atlas Shrugged and stuff like that. I haven't read much about Atlas Shrugged and the books, and I haven't seen the movie. But mm-hmm. I do want to comment on to the railroad system, because I did read Human Action by Ludwig von Mises. Now, Ludwig von Mises is an Austrian economist. Mm-hmm. And that's why I was trying to put in the chat room. What Barack Obama believes in is the Keynesian economic theory. That's usually just spend more to get out of a mess. Lower interest rates, artificial low interest rates, Federal Reserve, all that government control intervention. Mm-hmm. That's what Keynesians believe in. And I think that's very important to understand. Is people say, well, Barack Obama's stupid or retarded on these issues. Well, that's his ideology, you know what I mean? So he's not going to change, because that's what he was taught in school. And this is what's being taught in our colleges, Keynesian-style economics. So we're not going to see that much change in our leadership if we don't start changing what's being taught in our schools. That's what I want to point out as well. I did study Keynesian economics, but I wanted to study it for one reason, and that was to make sure I would never, ever become a Keynesian. And so mm-hmm. I studied Keynesianism, and I started Austrian economics, more free market. But to get towards the railroads, and the reason why I want to talk about it a little bit more is a little bit personal, is like I have a little, my eyes are a little bit bothering me for the past couple of days. Mm-hmm. So I take a little bit of medication for it, pink eye, whatever. And so I can't really watch TV, can't do anything like that. So I was listening to podcasts, and I was listening to Human Action. And he went over to railroad just recently. I'm like, wow. And what he was talking about was that in the 1800s, railroads were built. And many, many people were accusing the companies of being monopolies. But the problem is that the bigness and economic power of the railroad companies did not, it wasn't such the big factor in it. The reason why other railroad companies weren't being made is because the market did not allow for it to be made. The market didn't need another railroad company. The thing is, a lot of people say that the market is a car and it's like this and an engine. It's nothing like that. It's organic. We are the market. We all are the market. We all run the market. And the point was, in the 1800s, the railroad system didn't need 3, 4, 5, 6 different companies. It was at its first growth point, and it was using other investments to other places. The market was smart, and it was the free market. And so only so much capital was given into the railroad companies, and the rest of it was given to other places. I'm happy it happened that way, or we wouldn't be at this point as we are today, because if all the resources went to railroads and it went to basically use, it's useless, it's wrong. So we have to let the free market run as it is, and we're not letting that happen today, and we didn't let it happen do it a couple of decades ago. This is why we're in this mess. So what we really have to wake up is towards more free market ideologies, and understand that there are actual schools of economics that were even longer made than Keynesian economics. And it's very important to understand that and get informed on it. So that's why I want to add into the conversation there, Robert.
Well, great. I do appreciate it, and that makes so great sense. And, I hadn't spoken to anyone in the last, couple of years who had studied the Keynesian economics and who could speak to it, the way that you have, or in any way at all, because I hadn't spoken to anybody who'd studied it. I'd read about it briefly, and because I wanted to know what it meant. I briefly we touched on it in college, but that was for me many years ago, and so I really didn't have a lot of the inside and out information as to what it's all about. And I do appreciate that. Would you like to hold on for a minute while I announce another caller? Okay, hold on for just a minute. You're on with the C. Robert Jones Conservative Radio Report, 317.
Hello, Dr. Jones. It's Steve from Indianapolis again.
Steve, is that you?
Yeah. Some good conversation going on tonight about the economics, and I absolutely agree with the last caller. Mm-hmm. Keynesian economics is really a flawed system, and the bubbles never end in this nation. And the gold bubble will probably be the next one to pop, But, you know, they keep trying to raise housing prices artificially. I'm like, wages set the price of housing, period. If you know, if you want people to make low wages, of course housing prices are going to be low. So they need, I mean, we need, like Ron Paul said, we need to clear the market. And then the growth will start happening again. But instead, you know, tax credits to buy your first home and cash for clunkers and also prop up a price artificially instead of letting the free market determine that price. You know, it's between a rock and a hard place. They, you know, they claim that, oh, our wages are too high. Then they complain about the prices of the assets not going higher. You can't have it both ways. You're between a rock and a hard place. You have to make up your mind. Either you want high wages and high asset prices, or you want low wages and low asset prices. You get the, and people don't really understand how that works because it's economics, and they don't understand how to make their mind up between what do you want. And instead, we're stuck between a rock and a hard place.
Well, David, you wrote about something similar to this in your book. What do you think of that?
Well, it is. It's just like you said. When you get stuck, you know, it's like you're damned if you do and damned if you don't. But they've kind of orchestrated it this way, you know. And it's been a long time coming. It's, you know, it's part of the. I see a lot of things through the spectrum of those 45 communist goals.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm gonna speak to them wherever I see it happening. And you know, when you realize that they've been putting things in place and trying to line things up, so that you can't, you know, it's like positioning the pieces for a checkmate, you know. And that's kind of how I see that. I didn't hear everything he said because I was reading something else while mm-hmm. he was talking. I apologize. So. From what I understand, you know, it was I caught the last bit of what he was talking about housing right. prices and, you know, setting wages. I mean, something's worth what somebody will pay for it. I mean, that's the bottom line. But what's, you know, that is kind of dictated by wages. You know, if you're not making a lot of money, you're not going to be willing to pay, you know, X amount more for a house.
Yeah.
I only wish that property taxes would go down, you know, commensurate with your house price.
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They tend to stay the same or go up.
That's true. Thumpin, do you have anything to add to that, this portion of the conversation?
Yeah. You know, dealing with housing, and I'm the one in the chat from Wahoo Radio, and my name is Victor there, and the thing with the housing is that we have to let the prices fall, and they've been artificially risen over the past couple of decades, and they went to a point they shouldn't have went to, and that was a boom. Under the Keynesian economics, they start that boom cycle when they lower interest rates artificially, and there, of course, will be a bust. Now, what Obama fails to understand is, and he should understand because he's a Keynesian, is that you can never, ever have a permanent boom. And what we tried to do back in 2007 and 8 is try to keep that boom. And it's been proven, disproven so many, so many times that you cannot have a permanent boom. You must have that bust. You must have that deflation. So once we start having that occurring, the government starts to stop it. Let the prices fall to its natural rate. The market has to set the price. If we don't let the market set the price, the environment gets very distorted, gets screwed up for investors and investments. It gets a very, very dangerous game. It's like a blanket being thrown on top of it. You don't know what's under it. So we have to let the market decide where it is. We'll have to go back down. It's the sad reality of it. Or, you know, we can keep on going on this drug we're on, and then we're going to overdose on it and just basically die. So I say we go through this cycle we just created
mm-hmm.
and avoid starting it up again by doing this low artificial interest rates. And this is what the government's proposing right now. They're printing more money out. They're doing more artificial interest rates. This is doing nothing but devaluing our dollar and starting up the same cycle as was done before. Stop it and wake up to the reality that that economic system does not work. But before I have to go, I have to call a couple other people. But okay. I want to recommend everyone, you guys can go on Mises.org. It's a site I frequently go on. It's a whole bunch of stuff on Austrian economics. I didn't go to college, okay? I'm not done with high school yet. I didn't go there yet. So what I do like to learn is I pick up some books and I read. It's not that hard to do. To learn economics, it's very, very simple. Read Economics in One Lesson by Henry Hazlitt. Great, great book. You know, I started reading it back when I was in eighth grade. It's not a bad book. It's not hard to do. And this is why I sometimes get upset, is that a lot of people just get confused about it. And it's not hard to learn. It's not hard to learn. I'm 16. I did it. It's not hard. Yeah. And I recommend everyone to just to pick up the book, start reading it, start listening to the podcast. You can understand the concepts very easily. Not hard to do. And we can beat back this bad government.
Well, thank you so much. I do appreciate the call, and I do indeed enjoy your Blog Talk radio show. Well, wait a minute. You're on Blog Talk and somewhere else, aren't you? Where I saw you?
No, just on Blog Talk. I have a blog.
Okay. Got it. Okay, now I know where we're going here. I enjoy it, and thank you so much. I do appreciate you, and the input, and you are just way too smart for an old man like me right now, and it's almost embarrassing. Thank you so much for the call. I do appreciate it.
Yeah, have a great show, man. Keep it up.
Thank you. Thank you very much. All right.
Victor's awesome, isn't he?
Yes, the intellect is stifling here. He spoke. I thought I was hearing from a college graduate, maybe an economist, maybe perhaps a CPA, a PhD, maybe that kind of thing. So, wow, when he announced that that he hadn't reached that point yet,
he's 16.
Yeah, it's amazing.
He read that book in the eighth grade, which is 3 years ago.
yeah. Well, I can only say that I read Ayn Rand's book, just slightly younger than him. But I, he probably if he read it, at my age, he probably would have understood all the words. I can honestly say I didn't understand, most of the.
Yeah.
most of the verbiage, but I did enjoy. I did get the basic premise of the book as a young man. It's 317. What do you think right now? What do you think we should do here? The Obama administration. Obama's basically back on vacation. He's out campaigning. He's chastising once again Congress and treating them like children. And this reference to children and let's all act like adults. And he's talking down to congressmen, not making many friends, even among his own constituency right now. And once again, engaging in class warfare. I thought. I didn't believe it, of course, but he was supposed to come here and bring us all together. It was supposed to be a new way of doing business. This doesn't seem like a new way of doing business to me. It seems to me like this guy is seeking to drive a wedge between the American people, the Congress, the political system, and he was invited by the Republicans to meet today, but he decided he didn't want to do that, that he was going to go take a trip and fly off and campaign some more. Do you think that he wants to see this debt ceiling collapse, that we don't vote to extend it, and then he thinks he may gain politically from that?
Yeah, we talked about that last night. Obama is very slick, intelligent fellow, and his policies are very popular, and politics is cyclical too. When people hate the Democrats, a lot of people side with the Republicans. When people hate the Republicans, a lot of people side with the Democrats. So politics is cyclical too. So what they're going to do, they're going to play their cards, and and we talked about it last night, when seniors are looking at the budget, the financial statements, and saying, hey, we can't afford any more cuts. And other people on welfare are like, hey, we can't afford any more cuts. The military welfare recipients like Libya, they're like, hey, we need military presence, corporate welfare going on. you know, and this is so many welfare programs in the economy. And I'm so tired of the tax breaks for the rich. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. Every single day, I guarantee somebody's going to bring up those tax breaks from the rich. I didn't know when Bush passed those tax breaks, there would be so much controversy, and people were going to keep talking about it over and over. I damn near wish they would increase the tax so they shut the hell up talking about it.
But
they keep bringing it up all the time.
Wait a minute.
Now,
it's not the rich, though. They keep using the phrase, hoping that it'll sink in, that the American people are stupid, saying billionaires and millionaires and billionaires. But it's actually the tax is for $250,000 and above. Not
affluent.
Millionaires and billionaires. But you know, I think if they say it, you know, enough times, I was speaking with a friend earlier today, and you know what she repeated to me? Millionaires and billionaires. You know.
How loud did you roll your eyes?
Oh, I just said, you know what? You know, I said to her, honestly, I said, I make just slightly over $250,000 a year. Am I a millionaire to you, sweetie pie? Am I a millionaire? I know that
you're
you
affluent.
Make, I told her that you make more than that. Are you a millionaire? Because she makes more money. She makes more money than I do. So I asked her, are you considered to be a millionaire and a billionaire? And she, of course, she said no. Okay, well, that's what Obama's really talking about. It's not. I explained to her that he's using the millionaire billionaire thing to get your attention, to get you on his side. It's not millionaires and billionaires. It's $250,000 and above. And I told her, you've got some employees. If those taxes are raised, I can tell you right now, being that we've been friends for so long, you're probably going to have to fire somebody. You're going to have to lay somebody off. So I think, you know, I'm not sure. You know, that even Obama understands what he's doing here. You know, if honestly,
it's a focused group talking point.
Yeah, I think honestly, let me be completely candid here. If we were living in a robust economy, where America was doing well financially, where we had a balanced budget like the one that that Clinton had, where there was a surplus. And we were doing well. We were on great, sound financial footing. I would say, roll back those taxes, maybe. But then I'd also be of the mind that, well, what got us here? Maybe low taxes, maybe low regulatory input from the government. Maybe we should keep on doing what we're doing. But in an economy as fragile as ours, where the deficit is skyrocketing, Obama seems to be trying to tell the American people that if we raise taxes on the rich, on the very wealthy, then the deficit will fall. But
that's not correct.
No, it's not correct at all. What Obama wants to do is raise taxes so he can reap tax windfall so that he can spend more money. No. I'm sorry. He doesn't want to spend any money, you all. He wants to invest.
Invest.
It's a psychological warfare. Yeah. Semantics. It's
semantics and it's a con game. That's all it really is. And he is conning the American people. And who he's really conning is his own base, because they're the ones who fall for that. Most independents, you know, they're not going for it. And I'm not going to go ahead and say his base is stupid. They're a bunch of morons. I'm going to say that they want to believe in Obama. They want to believe what he's saying is absolutely the gospel. And so that's what they're going to believe. and that's it.
Yeah, we talked about that last night. I mean, the Federal Reserve is bigger threat than Congress. I mean, man, they cut. I mean, the small business, it's so hard to get a loan. The credit markets are so tight.
Mm-hmm.
And Thomas Jefferson said, you know, you let the banks run first through inflation, then through deflation. That's what we have now is deflation. You wake up homeless on the land your forefathers conquered. So that Federal Reserve is more of a threat than Congress is. People don't seem to understand that. And that's why gold is at $6 trillion globally, is because they keep printing more money. Quantitative easing and Ben Bernanke and what's going to happen if prices double? And what's going on with the federal government buying so much food supplies? I've been noticing the federal government's been purchasing a lot of food and stocking up a lot of food. Is the government preparing for some civil unrest that they're not telling us about?
Well, of course they are. Of course they are. We touched on that earlier this week. They are preparing for the possibility of civil unrest based on what based on plans that have been in existence since the mid 60s, but also as a result of what we're seeing every single day in places like Greece and currently in the UK, and you know it's all over the place, and it's evident in the austerity measures being taken to try to save countries. Countries are trying to save themselves from themselves, and you have these people who are these groups of people who have been so accustomed to being on the public dole, to getting what they want for nothing, getting something for nothing, that they don't want to let it go, and they're not really fully understanding the fact that once it's gone, it's all gone. You know, it's like.
Yeah, you remember when Nixon? I don't mean to cut you off.
No. Yeah.
Remember when Nixon capped the gas price?
Yeah.
You remember when Nixon capped the gas price? My grandfather said that he was a truck driver at the time. He'd drive around and see fuel tankers being told to just sit and wait and being paid for it. So while these guys were sitting and waiting, fuel was running out at the gas stations. And he was like, it wasn't because there wasn't enough fuel, it was because they were getting paid to sit and wait. So what I'm saying is the American people don't understand that it's not what you see on TV, it's what you don't see behind the scenes.
Yep.
And they don't understand. And they're like, well, they keep lying to us. Well, of course, if you let a political president lie to you, then they're all going to think they can lie to you and get away with it. I would like these presidents to sign a contract saying you're going to do exactly what you say you are going to do. Because if the next president does it next year, if he lies to us next year, this country is over. It's over. We're going to the Stone Age.
Well, that's
if
exactly
a rhino
right.
gets in, another Bush. Oh, my God, it is going to be a mess. And then they're going to be voting liberal again.
you're so right. And then, we can pretty much say that we're pretty much done. We're going the way of Greece. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll be right back.
When you see around the globe the maldistribution of wealth, the desperate plight of millions of people in underdeveloped countries, when you see so few haves and so many have-nots, when you see the greed and the concentration of power within, did you ever have a moment of doubt about capitalism and whether greed's a good idea to run on?
Well, first of all, tell me, is there some society you know that doesn't run on greed? You think Russia doesn't run on greed? You think China doesn't run on greed? What is greed? Of course, none of us are greedy. It's only the other fellow who's greedy. The world runs on individuals pursuing their separate interests. The great achievements of civilization have not come from government bureaus. Einstein didn't construct his theory under order from a bureaucrat. Henry Ford didn't revolutionize the automobile industry that way. In the only cases in which the masses have escaped from the kind of grinding poverty you're talking about, the only cases in recorded history are where they have had capitalism and largely free trade. If you want to know where the masses are worst off, it's exactly in the kinds of societies that depart from that. So that the record of history is absolutely crystal clear that there is no alternative way so far discovered of improving the lot of the ordinary people that can hold a candle to the productive activities that are unleashed by a free enterprise system.
But it seems to reward not virtue as much as ability to manipulate the system.
And what does reward virtue? You think the communist commissar rewards virtue? You think a Hitler rewards virtue? You think, excuse me, if you'll pardon me, do you think American presidents reward virtue? Do they choose their appointees on the basis of the virtue of the people appointed or on the basis of their political clout? Is it really true that political self-interest is nobler somehow than economic self-interest? You know, I think you're taking a lot of things for granted. And just tell me, where in the world you find these angels who are going to organize society for us?
Well,
I don't even trust you to do that.
I remember America. Sure, you can still find it on a map, but nobody older than 20 thinks this is America. Even if coordinates are the same, we've lost our compass. You don't have a direction without reference, the true north. For America, it was liberty. When we lost the love of liberty, our understanding of liberty, it was just a matter of time before the rest of it was lost. Some think it started when the auto companies were nationalized, or the police state to control the internet, or when certain companies couldn't fail because their relationship with politicians made them too big to fail, and the rest of us, without political influence, were too small to succeed. Sure, that all happened pretty quickly, over just a couple of years, but liberty had been gradually devolving for decades. Some of the more astute, like Ayn Rand, saw it about 50 years before others. She warned us, but people didn't believe it could happen here until it did. Laws had been used to loot productive individuals and businesses, but in the new millennium, under Bush, then Obama, graft, corruption, and crony capitalism were no longer hidden behind closed doors. The looters and their laws came out of hiding like rabid animals that were no longer afraid of humans. It was brought into the spotlight, and it was celebrated as enlightened economic policy. Ayn Rand asked the question in Atlas Shrugged that the rest of us were asking 60 years later. Which failing financial institution will the administration pluck from the flames of crisis? And which will it let roast? Which market or investment technique will the regulators bless? And which, in a capricious change of rules, will it condemn or outlaw? As John Galt said in his radio address,
you decided you had a right to your wages, but we had no right to our profits. You called it selfish and cruel that men should trade value for value. You've now established an unselfish society where they trade extortion for extortion.
People who had never produced or managed anything tried to manage every aspect of our lives, and they brought production to a standstill. And eventually, they decided to micromanage the food supply in the name of fairness and safety. And we all know what happened then. Fiction can be a powerful influence, for good or bad. It's too bad more people didn't read Atlas Shrugged. They might have realized where this was heading.
All right. That's called I Remember America. And here's the deal, folks. Get yourself a copy of Ayn Rand's book, Atlas Shrugged. Read it. Or better still, my personal choice is to listen to it on as an audio book. The producers of the new movie that came out April 15th, based on Ayn Rand's classic libertarian novel, Atlas Shrugged, they say that its theme of rebellion against intrusive government paints an eerily accurate picture of socialistic forces in modern America under this current administration, under the Obama administration. The film is about now, right now. Atlas Shrugged Part 1 came out in April, should be coming out on DVD soon. Take a look at it. I don't get any profit from mentioning the book or the movie or anything like that. It's about education. It's about seeing what a fictional novel had to say 50 some odd years ago. You know, the book was written in 1957, and how it eerily applies almost exactly, folks, to what's happening today during the course of this administration. It is eerie. It's not like the Bible, you know, or the Book of John or Revelations, which I talked about on previous blog talk shows. This is a woman who wrote a book, a novel, a fictional novel, about an intrusive government who seeks to overtax and overregulate and overmanage every aspect of our lives, much like George Orwell's 1984, Ayn Rand's book, and how eerily it all has come into play right here and right now. There are so many parallels. It's almost haunting how similar what Rand wrote 50 years ago and what is actually taking place this very day. This very day, not last week, not last year, not last month, not in the future, but today. Look around you. Look around you, folks. You see the Middle East imploding. You see gas prices skyrocketing. You see the government interfering with business. These were all themes that were part of the book 50 years ago. Now, and now they're part of the movie. Now, I haven't seen the movie, so I really can't speak to it right now. But apparently the movie faithfully recreates Rand's 1957 story of powerful railroad executive Dagny Taggett and her struggles to keep her business alive while society crumbles around her. And it's a really interesting read. It was when I was a kid. It was when I was in college. It was a great read while I was out in the world. But now it's fatalistic because it's all about what's happening now. One of the most memorable characters in Atlas Shrugged, is John Galt, played in the film by Paul Johansson. I think John Galt is pretty much in all of us. We should all be able to embrace what John Galt represents. And John Galt is in the book a creator, an inventor, and he symbolizes the idealistic power of the human mind, the brilliance of the man, the antithesis of a stifling government-controlled social structure. It's an amazing read. What I want to talk about, what we're talking about tonight, is how that book plays into society right now when you have an administration that is at war, folks, with business, with American businesses and industry. On one hand, talking about how we need to innovate and invest in our factories and manufacturing, and another, how these fat cats are making actual money and enjoying and reaping the rewards of their hard labor. How sad is that? How unfair is it for a corporate magnate to work his butt off during the most cherished years of his young life to reach a point where he can actually fly around in a corporate jet and be vilified for doing so, while President Obama flies around in the most fancy, smancy, most sophisticated aircraft on the face of the earth at a cost of $200,000+ per hour to fly, to maintain, to get off the ground, $250,000 an hour. It's actually right more around $200,000 an hour, but still, that's a lot of jack, and he's flying around all the time. And that's a that's the ultimate corporate jet that he's flying around in. At taxpayer expense, he's not paying for a dime. Anybody want to talk about it? David?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's the truth. No, I mean, I was just doing a search for the Orwell 1984 and the Animal Farm. There's actually a site where you can read it online, and I'll be getting to that in my spare time, of course. But you know, it's right. I mean, it's Marxism, and you know what? People don't know what Marxism is. I remember I had a friend of mine, and I think we talked about this when you were on with me My buddy in Buffalo, New York, my, you know, two peas in a pod. And now he's moved back, and here it is, you know, 20 years or so later. And, I found him on Facebook, and we were chatting up. We were laughing it up. We were, you know, going on and on. Well, then, you know, I told him I was writing a book. Well, what's the book about? And I told, you know, got into that. So then immediately I saw what side he was on, and it wasn't mine. And, I mentioned the word Marxism, and he put, you know, all capital letters, Marxism, question mark. What are you talking? He doesn't even know what it, I was like, have you read the Communist Manifesto? Do you know anything about communism? You know, and if you don't, you know, I was being, he was yelling and screaming and flipping out. He was actually chatting to me while he was teaching class, and they were wondering what he was laughing at and stuff. But I don't think he knows the mechanics of Marxism. You know, you first have to, you know, to get a society towards communism, you've got to first foment the class war. And, you know, often that will come after a long period of opportunity for people, for there to become a disparity in income. Yeah. And, you know, then you start pitting the two groups against each other, and then you get, you know, there's always, obviously going to always be fewer people, you know, in the bourgeois than there are in the, you know, of the proletariat. And, then you mobilize by numbers to overthrow and take and, you know, just loot basically in the name of fairness. So
exactly.
But he didn't know anything about that. And you know, it's a word that calls it. It's like I said, in one of my shows, communism, when you bring up communism, it always gets like an eyeball roll. And, you know, it really needs more than that, because, you know, a lot of the stuff that, you know, a lot of the stuff that is happening is based on these communist goals, and you know, they've been working under the radar for a long, long time.
Yeah, that's exactly right. 317.
See, people don't appreciate what a lot of the businessmen go through to build these big companies. They don't understand, you know, how much money they're spending now, that they only get, you know, 10 cents of profit on the dollar, that they're basically paying out money hand over fist for employees. They're taking enormous risks.
Mm-hmm.
They don't understand how to build an asset base. They don't build generational wealth. They don't understand that because they're employees and they're not businessmen or investors. So they come in from a give me attitude. Feed me and give me.
Yeah.
They have no idea of the providers, the people are doing the hiring. They had to build that. And they don't, there's a lot of people just don't give a damn about businessmen. And I started with Enron. A lot of this started with Enron. And just because of a few bad apples, they want to throw away the entire capitalist system.
Right.
It's because of a few bad apples. All we need to do is get rid of the bad apples and get back to business. Just like the NBA. All you guys probably heard, they went on strike. They're going on strike.
Mm-hmm.
Because labor and business are not getting along.
Yeah.
The NBA players said, hey, we want a percentage of money. Well, they will take a little bit of a cut, but we want more money. And, you know, the owners don't agree. So you can't kill one without the other. And so people don't really understand how to build something. All they know is give me college, they got the education, give me. That's all they know. They don't know how to build something. I started a business right out of high school. They don't understand that, you know, the other side of the coin and being the one that failed, actually trying to build. They don't understand that. So they'll never will appreciate entrepreneurs, and because they see us as Enron. We're just trying to exploit them. We're trying to fraud them. So you sell your stock. No, you can't sell your shares. I got to sell mine first. you know, like the Enron crash, and all the employees lost all that money. And that's why they went to jail. You know, and the guy had the heart attack. You know what I mean? So there needs to be a balance there. And our morals is really drop low in America. You know, if America had moral values, we really wouldn't be concerned, because America can fix itself. But with the moral values are so low, people will do anything nowadays. So the government can throw around a little money, and it'll be dead bodies all over the place.
More yeah. Communist goals.
Yeah.
Tear down the morality, tear down religion, tear down the culture. Those are communist goals. So.
Right, and we see this same thing playing out recently with the Boeing fiasco, where Boeing had the National Labor Relations Board proposed that Boeing had wrongfully built a new plant in South Carolina for the sole purpose of wreaking revenge on the Boeing union in Washington State. And it's bizarre. It's a strange way of second guessing a business decision. Now, so Boeing says that the unions are costing us a ton of money here. We can go to South Carolina and build a plant there without any union interference, pay our employees well, and make a lot of money. Let's do that. And the National Labor Relations Board, which is part of this administration, says that no, you will not be allowed to build another plant in South Carolina unless it's a union shop, because we believe that the only reason why you're doing this is so you don't have to have to pay unions, that you want to pay union back for being union, and so we won't allow it. This government has gone mad, drunk with power. They are all coming out, all of these socialists, communists, Marxists, Leninists, weirdos, wackos are coming out of the woodwork now, because you have a president in office who is extremely sympathetic to their issues, their concerns, their belief system. They're emboldened by the fact that the president of the United States is a socialist himself of the worst order. And so now they're coming out. But here's the thing. All of this is subject to backfiring. The United States government is not absolute in its power over its citizenry. We've seen that time and time again, most notably with a civil war and civil unrest. The United States government is not invulnerable. I wish these folks would understand that. This government is not all-powerful. It is not a situation where the people are going to be controlled and be stomped on for too much longer.
Yeah, not fragile.
Yeah, if these folks aren't careful, if they're not careful, they're going to touch off a full-scale civil war in this country, rioting, looting, all sorts of issues are going to occur as a result of, number one, these outrageous regulations, this nanny state mindset where they're attempting to control nearly every single thing we do, and this class warfare issue, as we spoke about last night. People are going into stores now and just taking things, because they believe that these big government companies, these corporations, they should be giving us this stuff for free, because they made their money off the backs of the poor working people. So why should I have to pay for a case of beer? Why should I have to pay for cigarettes? Why should I have to pay for milk for my baby? You're making a ton of money, Mr. Corporate Magnate. You can do without some of this stuff. You can do without what's a gallon of milk and some eggs and some bread to you? I'm going to go ahead and take these things, and you shouldn't try to stop me. Yeah. I shouldn't have to go to jail for stealing from your store, because hey, It's not much. I'm not taking a whole lot. Let me wet my beak.
I did my show earlier today on like riots and civil unrest and I talked a lot about all that and a little bit of the history of it in America and I started out with a riot that happened Tuesday in Egypt, but you didn't mm-hmm. hear about it. I stumbled on it on Twitter. I saw this feed coming through, you know, about a play-by-play about, you know, now there's police throwing rocks back at protesters, you know, and I read the whole Twitter feed. It was like two or three different people with running Twitter feeds about giving play-by-plays from different perspectives, and I brought them all together. That was the first part of my show, but then I went into the history of it in America.
Yeah.
And what I found was, doing a cursory search was alarming, because from 1967 to 1970, there mm-hmm. were as many documented riots as there were almost the whole century.
Yeah.
Those 4 years. And then I thought, well, what was significant about those years? Oh, yeah. Saul Alinsky, Francis Fox Piven.
Mm-hmm.
That was their day.
Yeah.
So, but then what I was trying to point out was, you know, if we can get back to the civil society, you know, everything's going to be fine. I don't know how deep the divide is in the country. It's, you know, perception is reality. It might not be as deep as it seems. And there has been civil unrest before and followed by a civil society. So my show was kind of talking about whatever happens, we'll get it back. As long as, you know, if we get some good leadership, you know, the decade with the least, take a guess what the decade which has had the least amount of documented riots.
Mm-hmm.
What decade would you guess?
The decade that had the least amount of riots, I think, probably would be the early 20s during the beginnings of the.
All right, stop from 1960 to now.
Oh, the least?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
No. From 1900 to 1959, there was like 67. But then mm-hmm. from 60 to 69, there was 61.
Okay.
You know, and then half mm-hmm. of those were started in 1967. So.
Okay, I got it. All right. All right.
13.
not bad. Interesting. I mean, I had no idea. I hope the folks in the chat room and those folks who are listening got that. 317, jump in here real quick before we sign off for the evening.
Yes, I remember those Russian military analysts were saying, you know, America probably will go civil war and break up into four different sections. It's possible, the riots and everything, but we also have a very docile population as well. There's a lot of docile people in America as well. So, yeah, we do have some gun owners, some crazy people, but we also have people that want to follow orders to an extreme. Yeah. And that also concerns me as well, because mm-hmm. they'll do something they're told they can do it.
Yeah, that's exactly
without
right.
Without regard to life or morals or what the Bible says or anything. They'll just do it just because Obama said I could do it.
Mm-hmm.
So. Just following orders.
I'm sorry I shot your mom. I was just following orders.
Yeah. We all know where that led, you know, back in the during the course of the Hitler reign and World War II. I just want to before we close out the show for the evening, I want to go ahead and speak to the Ayn Rand book Atlas Shrugged just one more time. Because I think that it's very important that we understand what is going on here in America. You don't have to agree with me. I recommend that everyone do their homework. And just like my main man Glenn Beck said today, I cried like a baby. I'm not gonna hide it. You know, when Glenn Beck's show went off, the final 5 minutes ticked down, and the show was over with Fox. I was emotional. I'm mad enough to admit it. But I did go right ahead earlier this morning and then sign up for Glenn Beck TV. So I'm recovering nicely. But the movie Atlas Shrugged, which hit the movie theaters, has gone mostly unnoticed. And as I said before, the major part of the storyline involves government, unions, and how they are trying to control everything, from how much we can earn to what we can own and produce, in almost eerily similar fashion as Obama's National Labor Relations Board is attempting to control Boeing. Not what they make, but where they make it. Now, Boeing lost billions of dollars due to union strikes that crushed production at the plant, in some cases for months, during the last 20 years. And strikes and work stoppages every 3 or 4 years resulted in Boeing looking to build a second production line for their 787 Dreamliner elsewhere. Now, even though Boeing did not have to negotiate with the union concerning opening a new line at a different location, they stepped up to try to make something work in Seattle and started negotiating with the union to keep the work in the area. During negotiations, the unit wanted guarantees Boeing was unable to give. The demands were unsustainable and would put Boeing in a bad position for the future. So Boeing looked elsewhere to build a second production line and headed to a business-friendly South Carolina where a minor $2 million investment resulted in 1,000 new jobs in the area. And so now the National Labor Relations Board, the NLRB, a federal government agency with leadership who reports directly to President Obama, is trying to halt the plant from producing any planes when it goes into production this coming July. If that isn't eerily similar to what's going on with Ayn Rand's book, Atlas Shrugged, nothing is. Pick up the book, get yourself a copy. I recommend the audio book personally. Check it out. I want to thank everybody, all of you, especially my two great callers, the writer of the book, Stay Mad, which can be found where?
Lulu.com.
Lulu.com. David Graham's new book, Lulu.com, and the name of the book is Stay Mad. And you know what? I think I'll do just that. Thanks, GDT. Great, great, great. There will not be a conservative TNT show tonight, but there will be GDT and Cool Mike at 11:30, I suspect. So be there or be square. I will be there. I'll be wide awake tonight. And my good friend, my new friend, my buddy from 317, announce yourself one more time because I keep forgetting your name, and I'm so sorry that I do that.
Steve from Indianapolis,
Indiana, which is where a lot of my family hail from. I will be there for the Phelps reunion later on in July. So maybe I'll get a chance to meet Steve when I'm in town. Thank y'all for being here. Thanks. I really do appreciate it all. Everybody who's listening, taking the time out of your busy evening to come in and listen. I do appreciate it. You guys are great. And stay tuned for GDT and Cool Mike show at 11:30. Love you all. Thank you for being here. I will be awake. Unto soldier. I'll be there. Be there if you swear. I promise I will be there for Cool Mike show at 11:30. Love you. Thank you for joining me tonight. God bless you all. And we'll be back tomorrow. Good night, everybody.
Have it for their very own. Go ahead and hate your neighbor. Go ahead and cheat a friend. Do it in the name of heaven. You can justify it in the end. There won't be any trumpets blowing.
people of the valley sent a message up the hill asking for the buried treasure, tons of gold for which they kill. Came an answer from the kingdom, with our brothers we will share all the secrets of our mountain, all the riches buried.
Soldier rides away.